Well, hey, cousins, you are listening to Revolutionary Hood Rat with Kim Young, adult black social worker, and welcome back. Y'all, it is officially the 1 year anniversary of Revolutionary Hood Rat. I've been at this thing for a whole year, and y'all have been here with me. This right here, wouldn't have imagined it. I am proving to myself every single day that I am wildly capable of things that I didn't really believe were possible. And also, I can be disciplined. People are always, you know, when I say, oh, no, I'm working on self-discipline, I'm like, what are you talking about? You're one of the most disciplined people that I know. I'm like, I wear it well, but I be a little chaotic as a bitch. But I have been at this thing for a whole year, and I'm super duper proud of myself. I also lied to myself. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to record a special 1 year anniversary episode because, you know, this is a milestone or whatever. But then I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm tired. I got a lot of life happening in a short amount of time. So I did not make the time because I could not find the time to actually produce a 1 year anniversary episode that falls in line with the 1 year. But that does not mean I'm not going to celebrate in a way that is I am absolutely worthy of. So instead of having a 1 year anniversary, I'm going to pull an interview in that I recorded quite some time ago. That's a really good one that needs, you know, the world needs to hear it. And so I'll definitely introduce the guests shortly. Before I get to that, I want to make mention for a little church announcement if you missed it on social media or if you're not signed up for the newsletter. But myself, Marvin Tolliver, and Joy Britt, yo, we going on tour. We going on tour. And by tour, I mean we doing hood rat things across the country at brunch starting in Philly. So, if you have not heard the news, we are launching We Off Community and Hood Rat Joy Brunch Tours. And the first stop is going to be in Philly on September 7, 2014, from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Rec Philly. We're so excited. And the premise behind this brunch tour, this series of brunches, is honestly just to bring folks together who are in this work, centering Black joy, centering Black stories, centering Black people, and helping and healing professions so that we could just come together and just be. It has been a rough 5 years, right? A very intense, rough 5 years of taking on a lot of shit while also dealing with our stuff at the same time, trying to be present for folks who are dealing with a lot of structural and institutional racism and oppression and supremacy while also dealing with our own racism, oppression, and supremacy, where we really haven't, you know, done a good job. I don't think we've done a good job of creating these intentional spaces for us to just be together. So that's what We Off is about. And we called it We Off because look, we is off work. We're not coming together to talk about work. We're coming together to do joyful and hood rat things. So I hope that people will consider pulling up on us in Philly on September 7th. You can purchase a ticket at weoffbrunch.com. You know, we got individual tickets, VIP tickets, and a homies and cousins package, which is a group ticket for five people to attend brunch. The food will be phenomenal. We're going to have a cousins chat, so you'll be able to hear from me, Marvin, and Joy. If you've been, you know, kicking it with us online, you're like, oh, they seem cool. Like, they a good vibe. It's real. Like, we are actually the people that you see online. Like, we them people in real life. So pull up on us. Learn from us. We'll learn from each other. We'll be with each other. Have fun with each other. Do hood rat things with each other. And I'm going to be drinking Prosecco, and the DJ going to be playing trap music. So it is just bound to be a good ass, Black ass, joyful ass, hood rat ass time. So if you are interested, you want to grab a ticket, that is weoffbrunch.com. So enough of that. Let me go ahead and introduce the guest that I have for this episode this week, which is Kiana Williams. Kiana is a licensed clinical social worker and the owner of Healing Black Souls Consulting. Kiana is originally from Newark, New Jersey, where she was able to grow, learn, and develop a strong cultural identity and a sense of Black pride. And from a very young age, she knew that she wanted to do something that would help enrich and empower the lives of others. Kiana graduated from Walla Walla University, which we had a whole conversation about Walla Walla, y'all. So she graduated from Walla Walla in 2008 with her bachelor's in social work and in 2009 with her master's in social work. So Kiana specializes in culturally specific counseling, coaching, and consultation for individuals, groups, organizations, and families. Kiana believes in the power of change, and that is what motivates her to continue to do this work. Kiana's goal is to serve her community by educating, supporting, and empowering to help individuals, families, and organizations reach their highest potential. And so, y'all, help me in welcoming Kiana to Revolutionary Hood Rap. We finally were able to make this happen.
Yes, we were. Yes, we were. And I'm happy about it.
We're finally able to make this happen. Thank you for your grace and understanding when we had to reschedule. I don't know what I was thinking. I think my calendar just didn't, they didn't, all four of them didn't talk to each other, which had me double booked. So I want to thank you for being willing to make this happen in spite of.
Of course.
So the first place that I always love to start with, just the Black and Brown folk that join me on Revolutionary Hood Rat, is to hear the pathway that got them into the work. Because as I always kind of frame it for listeners and then even for guests, is you already know what it is. Like, our stories as Black people, especially engaged in the field of social work, are often left behind and not included. And then it makes it really difficult for those that are beginning their journey in this work to really see themselves in it and see where they might belong. And beyond that, as Black people, we're a storytelling oral history people, right? And so Absolutely. We learn through storytelling, and our history is passed down through the way we tell stories, which is why I love to start with hearing the story that kind of brought you along this path of getting into the field of social work.
So I'll try to make it as concise as possible, because honestly, it's such a long story, but I want to start this by saying, I really believe today that I was born to do this. Social work is what I mean. Of social work. And when I say social work, I don't mean social work as a profession. Like, I mean the actual work, right? The community work. The advocacy, you know, doing this for Black people. I really believe I was born to do this. And I think that, so I grew up in Newark, New Jersey, in the inner city, hood, whatever you want to call it. I think that just me growing up the way that I grew up, growing up in poverty. I also think that growing up in a Black utopia was a plus, you know, grew up in a broken home. Although both of my parents were very active in my life, just growing up in the inner city, lots of poverty, lots of crime, you know, drug addiction, mental health, all these things that was just mm-hmm. really normal to me, right? Mm-hmm. Not growing up thinking that this is an issue or a problem, but just really growing up with, like, you know, this is just what it is, right? Also learning about, you know, racism and systemic oppression and all these things that really had no context because I was just in my city, right? Like, in my city, surrounded by what I was surrounded by. And so in terms of social work, that didn't really come to me until my mom actually decided to go back to college later on in her life. I was in high school, and she decided she wanted to go back to college. But I feel like before that, she always had this quest to get out of the hood. So yeah. She would often say that, you know, of course, again, I don't really know what that means, but she eventually did get out of the hood, and she decided to go back to school to get her social work degree.
Oh, wow. And
yes. So she did that. I was 16 when she did that. And so she moved across the country to do that, to a very, very white university called Walla Walla University. A lot of people think it's a fake place, but it's actually a real place.
I want to talk about Walla Walla, but not yet.
Okay, we will talk about Walla Walla. But so I went from the blackest place, of course, in my perspective, to the whitest place in the world.
Because, right? I'm trying to picture it in my head, because, you know, a lot of our cultural references for New Jersey is Lean On Me. So I'm like, how did it went from Lean On Me to Walla Walla?
Right. To, yeah. Listen, yes, that, all of that. What yes. You picking up what I'm putting down. You getting the visual picture of what I'm saying. So anyway, so she did that. And, you know, through her doing that, you know, I got to go to high school, finish my last year of high school, where she went to to co where she enrolled in college. And then, of course, I was in a predominantly white setting. So what are they doing? Talking about college, what they're gonna do when they graduate from high school, which was not really the thing, where I was. And so, of course, my mom's like, you gotta go to college, there's no choice. Like, you just have to go. And at that point, it's like, well, why? Why are we talking about college now? Because it's not really something I was talking about growing up. So anyway, I had a passion for cosmetology, hair, nails. I used to always, I did it for all my friends, all my family, most of my high school years. And so I really wanted to go to cosmetology school. But when I graduated from high school, my mom pretty much forced me to go to college. So I ended up going to the college that she went to. And originally I was studying education, but only because I was trying to rebel. First, you're making me go to college. I'm not going to go to college and study what you're studying. That's what I'm not going to do. So anyway, long story short, I ended up going to, so I completed my freshman year of college and I was like, you know what? I want to go to cosmetology school. My parents not paying for it. I'm going to do what I want to do. So I ended up going to cosmetology school, spent a year there. It was a good experience, but I through that experience, I realized that it was more of a hobby for me and not a career path. So through that experience, I kind of started to come into myself a little bit more and getting out of my environment, just kind of seeing the way of life, I don't want to say better, but just a different way of life. And I started thinking about home and I started thinking, why is it that more folks don't just leave and go to get to a better position or a better way of
Like
life?
thinking about people back home in New Jersey.
Absolutely. And just thinking about how my thought process was different because I had so much more exposure to things and life from a different perspective. And so that is when I went back to school and I started studying social work. As a as a so th at that point I knew like I'm this is what I'm gonna do. I'm going back to get my people. That was my
Because,
goal.
but you went back because now you wanted to do it, not because your mama said you had to do it. You was done rebelling. You was like, no, it's my decision.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And so, but and then there were little trinkets of like, if you want to do something, if you want to make a difference, this is the way. This is the way. I mean, the language. Like, you black. You if you want to do something, if you want to be important, you got to have the alphabet soup behind your name. All that kind of stuff, right? Which growing up, it's like whatever. You don't really understand it, but as you grow and mature and you get more exposure to the world, then you realize and kind of. So that was kind of me starting to put everything together, and so I did that, and I think that through my journey of like discovering like who am I, what do I want to contribute to society, and that's kind of where I started. Like I'm going back to get all my people. So in order to do that, I was told you got to be somebody and you got to have these letters behind your name. So you can't really go back and get the people or help the people if you don't have anything to offer them. Now, do I necessarily subscribe to that 100% today? Absolutely not. But that's where I was, 20 years ago. So that was my journey to social work. I studied, I got my BSW, and then went an extra year in the program I was in. If you have your BSW, you just do an extra year and you get your MSW. So, I banged the whole thing out. And I will say that it was the most racist, uncomfortable experience that I ever had. However, I will say that growing up where I grew up with the parents that I had in the family that I had, it prepared me for that world. Because I think had I not had that upbringing and had I not been exposed to so much at a young age, I feel like I would have been, what's the word? More fragile, I think. Because I think growing up in a black utopia pretty much is what I like to call it, and learning about racism is different than
Different.
when you are out of, because like racism really has no, I mean, as a child, it had no reference. I mean, it was playing out my whole life. I just didn't
Didn't see it.
understand how, right? But being moved from your comfort zone, from being moved from around people who look like you everywhere you turn, being put into a place where now you are the only one, and people telling you, you know, you can't be this, you know, you can't, or you're not good enough because you're black. But your whole upbringing is like, no, you can do whatever you want to do, and you know, don't believe all those things, right? And so I think that prepared me for what, you know, what I was to experience in a predominantly white space in academia in general. It's just white as hell. So I think that, you know, all of that prepared me for that experience.
Yeah. I want to
So.
talk about the place where you moved to when you left New Jersey, which is Walla Walla. Let me share my frame of reference of Walla Walla.
Okay.
So I'm based in Richmond, Virginia, and I think like a lot of folks maybe in this industry about a decade ago, it was the emergence of trauma-informed care. And the people who are parading around the country to introduce this model of trauma-informed care came from Walla Walla, Washington. You didn't know that?
I
The ACEs, all of that stuff, adverse childhood experiences, trauma-informed care, it's all
did
based off
not
of
know that.
based off of a community, like a participatory community research project of infusing trauma-informed principles and practices inside of the school systems and the healthcare, social services, all of that shit. So the Walla Walla people was all over here in black ass Richmond, Virginia, telling us what to do about how to do trauma-informed care.
No, they were not.
Yes, they
We're
were.
gonna have to talk about this off, because that sound like that could be a whole hour and a half conversation
That's
itself.
a whole cover. So I'm just sharing my context for Walla
Wow,
Walla
I
because
didn't
they
even know that.
championed Walla Walla's work all throughout my city for a solid decade until people were like, ah, no. That don't fit in the gumbo that we got going on here in Richmond. We need to start talking about healing-centered engagement, not trauma-informed care from the Walla Walla people.
Listen,
So
going to one of the blackest, okay, you just painted a whole entire picture for me, and I'm just gonna leave it right
we
there.
gonna let that one marinate. And so what's kind of coming up for me is like this idea of the Walla Walla people leading this kind of conversation in my region, at least, around trauma-informed care. And you expressing that was some of the most racist experiences of like your academic journey, but then also just like personally coming from what you describe as a Black utopia. I would love if you would spend some time talking about your experience in kind of these two areas as a social work student, but then also as a social work educator that's still, right, like in a primarily like white academic space. So your experience as a
Absolutely.
student and as an educator.
Absolutely. So I think that what's interesting about my experience at Walla Walla is two things. That's also a Christian school, I will add. So add whiteness and steeped in deep Christianity. And okay, yeah, okay.
A whole
So
bunch of white Jesus and white people.
listen,
Ah!
yes, yes. Yes. Now I will say, like we often do, we always find the black folks, which I
We
did.
find each other. We have
Okay,
to. We
of
have
course.
to.
So that was, of course, my saving grace, and I found my people. But the experience of going through that very white school system and indoctrination of Christianity, because I didn't grow up with any religious affiliations at all. And so I did convert while I was at school, but that was as a result of me going to the black church and doing all the black church
Got
things,
you.
which I had no you know, I had no experience. So, you know, that was cool. But anyway, but you know, sitting through those courses, learning about not only social work from a Eurocentric lens, but then also learning about Christianity, which in my opinion is also Eurocentric, right? Not in its true historical origins, but from the perspective of learning at the university. So, I think for me the experience was, gosh, learning challenging to say the least, but I found myself trying to figure out through my experience of going through it as a student, like, how does this apply to me? Like, how does this apply to me, and who I am as a black girl, black woman growing up in this society, where I grew up, you know, my family of origin, the things that my family has experienced and been through, like I really felt myself trying to connect the dots. And unfortunately, I wasn't really able to do that because it did not center me or my experience, it or my or the experience of my culture. And so I feel like I spent a lot of my time with just that, like, how does this apply to me? How does this apply to my experience? And what, how am I going to be able to use this to do anything after I leave here? And so for me, it wasn't until I met some friends and colleagues that were also from the East Coast, and we started having conversations. And then I went to therapy, and I started to try to figure out who I was, to figure out, you know, all the buzzwords, trauma, all the words except for racism and oppression, and you know, systemic racism and oppression, because that's really what it boils down to, right? So all the buzzwords that were used in the program, like trauma and you know, adverse childhood experiences, you know, basically blaming
The
people,
individual.
yeah, blaming individuals, right? Rather than putting the onus on the actual system. So that was my experience. And I will say that, you know, when I graduated with my BSW, I felt like I knew nothing. Like I didn't know anything. I didn't feel prepared to work. I didn't feel prepared to do anything. And I mean, I feel the same way after getting my master's, but I think that while I was getting my master's, I was a little bit more in tune with self and like what I had going on. Like, 'cause I will say I was a very angry teenager and young adult, but, and I hate to,
Justified anger. I got angry
right,
and justified.
absolutely, but not even understanding why, not understanding why, not understanding the origin of it. And so being able to tap into that and understand myself and to do a lot of self-reflection, that is where I was able to figure out how I was going to use this social work degree that I was getting to help me not only help myself, but also like how is that going to translate into like this is going to be my career and this is what I'm going to do, right? And so I think that, so I will say that my personal healing and self-reflective journey really had to take place in order for me to be able to discover how I was going to do this work. And what I will say is what I noticed as a student, as a working professional, and as an adjunct professor, that is a huge missing piece from academia. Like there is no room for self-reflection. It's this idea of like I'm about to go and get this degree so I can go and help these people and fix these people.
To
And
help yourself first.
right, okay, there's no self-awareness.
Yeah.
There is zero self-awareness. There's zero self-reflection. And I'm just like, so y'all just out here traumatized and fucked up and don't even know why, don't even understand why.
You messing people up.
Okay, you just bleed all over folks and you don't even know why you mad. You don't even know why you sad. You don't even know, you don't even realize that you're traumatized. And so I will say that it was my therapy to myself, for myself. I, you know, part of my education. And I feel like I had to do that. I had to go inward because I was not about to get that from school. I wasn't going to get that from anybody besides, you know, myself. And so I think that was a huge piece for me. It was my own self-reflection, healing, and you know, therapy that helped me.
But even with that, though, right? So, like, there are so many people that will use the work to do what you did on your own, right? Like use their clients, use the distraction of a job, use the distraction of always being in crisis. I'm using the distraction of I have to fix and be present and do, and don't go do what you did, like their own internal work, their own separate process away from being in community with the families or individuals that you're supporting, as a professional. And I'm using air quotes. And I'm even wondering for you as somebody who is helping to guide, people that are a part of this new generation of social workers, how much of that is causing you pause and concern? And or are you, and it could be both, like, are you also, is there pause and concern and or kind of inspiration? and joy that you're also seeing within this emerging group of social workers that are entering the field from programs.
I love that. Let me pause because I feel like I'm about to just start word vomiting. So the thing about teaching in the School of Social Work is initially I was just like, because I think you know enough about me to know, like, I just think all this shit is fake, right? But yeah. But it's like,
I think it's all a performance,
because it's all like, this, none of this shit is real, this shit is bullshit. But I had interns like supervising me, or I was supervising interns, and I would always get, oh, you'll be a great teacher, you'll be a great teacher, you need to teach, and it's supervising MSW interns. And so I had my students encouraging me, and I had, you know, professors at the university. And so I'm thinking, I don't want to be a part of this bullshit. But then it's like, okay, we need outliers. We need outliers. We need people like us that's unapologetically Black. Like, I'm going to say the thing, and I don't care what the outcome is, because I'm just going to be real and I'm going to say the thing, right? And it's going to make everybody uncomfortable, and I might be asked to leave or whatever the case may be, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to say the thing.
Yeah.
So I started thinking, like, okay, so it kind of organically happened. One of my friends was teaching. She had an emergency, and she's like, hey, I need you to, they asked me to, if I knew somebody, and you fill in. So I started filling in for her. And surprisingly, because it's a predominantly white, Portland State University is predominantly white, let's just be clear. But so I was not expecting to go on after that. I was like, I'm gonna do this thing for her, and I'm getting up out of here. But I had, it's so interesting because that particular class, it was like, I had a lot of Black and brown students in that class, which is rare. And they were like, oh my God. Like, it was a chapter class. So it was like a 5:30, and then there was a 5:31, and they were like, you got to teach 5:31. And it was really, honestly, the motivation of my students. Like, I've never had a professor like you. It was really that kept me going. And, you know, just being real, saying the things, being like, look, we here talking about these theories with these books. That's all bullshit. I'm gonna just keep it real. As a person, as a Black person, as a person who has worked out in the real world for 15 plus years, none of this shit don't matter. None of this shit don't work when you working with Black and brown folks. And you know, of course, you know, white students, they turning red. And the Black and brown students is like, oh my God, this is like, just like eating it up. But so that's how I came, and that's how I talked to the university. Look, I am not centering whiteness, period. I don't center whiteness in anything in my life. So anything that I do, I'm not centering whiteness. So if y'all want me here, this is what you get. So that's how I stayed for so long. And really the feedback of the students, just really countless emails and like reaching out to me. I mean, there are students that I done forgot about that reached out to me from like 5 years ago, like, you saved me. You changed my idea about social work. You may help me to stay. All that, you know, all that. But teaching them all those things too, like, you, this is not, you are the work. The work is not separate from you. And and school doesn't teach us that, right? Like, I am the work. I am, the work is not, like, I'm Black 24/7, right? So it's like, I don't get to go to work, and then when I get home outside my door, let me take all this off. Let me take this Black off. Let me take this social work off. Let me take this. No, it's here 24/7. And so I think having those real conversations with students, letting them know these A papers that y'all striving for, like all of this shit is fake. This is all fake. What's it going to be like when you sitting in front of someone, when you hold the space with folks? How are you going to show up? How are you going to be different? Because this very system that we are saying is here to support these families, protect and advocate. No, we're also a part of the problem. Right.
And so
as a social worker, how are you going to sit with the fact that, like, you are a part of the problem? You represent folks that are a part of the problem. Mm-hmm. You work for entities that are a part of the problem. Like, how are you going to reconcile that as a social worker, right?
Yeah.
How are you going to reconcile that? And those are the real conversations I have with my students. Like, this is not about a paper. This is not about doing CBT. CBT don't work for Black folks. And I will say that, I will shout it from the mountaintops, right? And so without all of that BS, how are you going to really be able to hold space to really support folks that are dealing with crisis, dealing with real life, food insecurity, houselessness, all of these things. Like, how are you going to hold space? You're not going to do that by finishing this program, getting a degree, and thinking, I'm just going to go out and save the world.
No, it never works that way. It never works that way. And you brought up a lot of important factors that I think for people when you're kind of early on in this work, or maybe even having your own awakening, right? As maybe you've been like an OG social worker for a minute, but now you have just started, you know, begin your own learning process or journey, whatever that looks like for you, is there's no escaping that we participate in systems of harm as social work practitioners. Like, there's no way for us to escape that. And at the same time, it takes a lot of internal work and conversations and wisdom keeping and sharing with people who you kind of trust in this work to be able to, number one, just check you, but then also have those deep conversations around like, yeah, I acknowledge and accept that, you know, by nature of me practicing that I'm engaging in systems of harm, but I also get to decide the way I would like to practice. What frameworks I want to use to practice. That's liberatory frameworks, Afrocentric-based frameworks, whatever those look like. And I hear you and then like even other practitioners, they teach us a whole bunch of theories and interventions in these programs. The thing is, I don't believe that any of those theories work singularly.
No.
I think there's a way we have to pull from all of that shit, but then we have to keep it rooted in whatever our practice framework is. So like for me, like taking liberatory approaches to the work that I do, understanding how CBT fits in that and doesn't fit in that, understanding how systems theory fits in that and doesn't fit in that, whatever the theory is, right?
Yes.
And like taking those pieces, putting them all, kind of mixing that shit up, and then using it on the, like, well, using it to support the people that I'm in this work for. And I know from just our conversations online is, you know, a big part of the, one of the frameworks that you use is the Afrocentric social work perspective, right? So looking through this field from an Afrocentric Black centered lens. And I wonder if you can spend some time talking about how that just, you kind of already mentioned it, but really how it has influenced you to create and lead, right, your own kind of practice with the healing Black souls.
Yes. So I will say that for me, because I think it's different depending on how folks interpret it. For me, the reason why Afrocentric practices is so near and dear to me is because it really has an emphasis on valuing humanity, right? And I think for me, of course, as Black people, that's the number one thing. Like we were not seen and still are not seen as human, right? So I think valuing humanity is like the core of Afrocentric practices, right? But even taking a step further, valuing your humanity just for being, right? Not because of what you can do, not because of what, how many degrees you have, not because of what you're contributing to society, but truly valuing you for existing and for being, right? And I think that that is the problem with our society as a whole. Like, we don't value people, right?
Right.
And of course, my emphasis is always on Black people, but we don't value Black people, right? We don't value us just being, right? And I think we as Black people have also bought into that as well, right? Because we attach so much of who we are as a people to how much we can do for this society, how much we could do for others, right? And so that is so, that has been so much of our existence. And so that is why like Afrocentric practices is so important to me, because it truly speaks to the value and the humanity of all humanity. But of course, my emphasis is really on like Black and African bodies. And so for me, that is where healing Black souls was morphed out of my love for Afrocentric practices, but also really supporting, I mean, it's really truly what it says, healing Black souls is really, my desire is really to get Black folks back to the core of who we are as a people, because I think so much of what has happened and what continues to happen in this society is that it drives a wedge between us and our inner core and inner soul and who we are as a people. And so I really feel like we need to get back connected. And I think that we are the only ones that's going to be able to do that for each other by leading by example, by, being in community with each other, and by valuing each other, not without attaching it to what we can do and what we can contribute. And that is the hugest thing for me. It's so, I mean, just in everyday conversations with all, because I, I'm in relationship with all kinds of people, but it's like there's this theme of like, oh, I'm not doing enough, or if people are resting, right, and honoring like healing
Your
and resting
body,
body and their souls, it's like, oh, I'm lazy, I'm procrastinating. And I take great honor and pride in being like, no,
You're right.
you are resting, you are giving your body what your body needs. You, we don't, and there's this condition, truly, we are conditioned to be working, and our worth is so connected and tied to what we can, how much work we can do, whether that's physical work, whether that's mental work, whether that's spiritual, emotional work. It's always connected to work. And I know that those are like generational, like ancestral wounds that we need to really heal within ourselves. And I think, I just imagine that our ancestors are crying out like, what are you guys doing? Like, you, what the hell?
Like,
Like,
lay down.
I literally imagine them being like, what in the, like, all that shit I did, all that work and labor, and you, like, what? And I feel like that is, for me, that is what my motivation is right there, is to really heal that and like to break the chain of like, oh, you have to work. And I mean, of course, there's work, because like I just said, we are the work, but there's levels. And I, there's work in resting. Like, that's also a
Rest
task.
is a form of work. Like, if we have to look at it through that lens, and I think for a lot of Black people or just people in general who struggle with these concepts of like, nah, rest is our divine right, as the Nat Bishop would say, right? Reclaiming our
Absolutely.
bodies from white supremacy and capitalism. At some point, we just have to acknowledge that you, I, people who engage with this podcast and people in our networks and lives, hell, everybody but the 1%, like we can't opt out of capitalism. That shit is just not an option for us.
Absolutely.
But we all, and I say this all the time, we all get to decide how we want to participate in capitalism. But I can't check out. I gotta still like live here. You know what I'm saying? So I can't just check out, but I do get to redecide my relationship with it, my relationship with my body. And I love the fact that in and throughout your work, everything centers Blackness and Black people, but the fullness and the wholeness of Black people. These are the
Absolutely.
conversations that I have with Black folks all the time. They'll be like, oh, nah, Kim, I love Black people. I'll be like, all Black people. You love Sexy Red the same way you love Michelle Obama, all Black people.
And see, oh my God, I love, and I think this is also what attracted me to you too online. And I'm so glad that you're highlighting that. You do not love Black people if you only
You
love
got to
heterosexual
pick and choose.
Black people.
Exactly.
That you, that's not a thing.
That's how it go.
I'm sorry, you do not love Black people. You don't love
No.
Black people. And I'm doing some work with a Black trans woman right now locally, because that was one of my other missions. Like, I'm like, I gotta connect with the Black LGBTQIA plus community. I gotta connect. And I wanted it, I didn't want to force it. I wanted it to happen organically, but I feel like we need more displays of that example, because it's like we are fighting the same fight,
Same
right?
shit.
And so it's like, again, we've drank the Kool-Aid. So us drinking the Kool-Aid got us fighting again,
Each
basically got
other.
us performing white supremacy out on one another. And
On each
it's
other.
like, so for me, when I think of healing, those are the things that I'm talking about. I'm talking about healing all of those parts of us as a community, as a people, that just came for us from us drinking the Kool-Aid, right? Being steeped in white supremacy and buying into these ideologies that we think is normal. But it's like, no, this is not of us. This
It's
is
not of us.
colonization. This is like, we didn't subscribe to gender norms and binary. Like, no, there's whole continents in Africa who they don't subscribe to that. So let's stop saying that that's, that's white people shit, because no, that's not.
No,
That's another thing that was colonized.
Yeah. I mean, colonialism, that's a conversation for a whole different day.
Okay.
But it's like for like, you know, us as Black people, or just people in general, just having a human experience is like getting back to the Sawabona, which is like, I just see you for who you are. Like, I'm seeing you, which means I'm also seeing myself. And so many of us have gotten away from seeing ourselves and other people because we have prescribed to just the white supremacist, a white-centered thinking of individualism when that doesn't fit on who we are. We are a collective folk.
Yes.
We are people who are always in community. We are people that heal in community. We are not people that heal in kind of these separate corners and spaces.
Yes. You can't heal in isolation.
You can't.
It's not a thing.
We're mammals. I don't know what to tell people.
You can't heal in isolation. And all these it takes a village. All these things that we think is just like, oh, no, that's real.
It's
that's
very real.
That is why we are suffering, because we have to get back to our origins.
Got to get back to each other, right? Got to get back to each other. Got to be able to, like, silence the bullshit. Like, we are so quick to doubt the brilliance of our own people that it's actually maddening for me.
Yes.
Like, we are willing to accept what other people say with maybe a lighter skin, a whiter face, with or without the letters we got behind our names, and take that shit as truth. But like, your own people done told you something and you like, oh no, like, I need to fact check that.
Yeah.
Bitch, I just told you the same thing this white person just told you, but you take that as truth.
And they stole it and gave it to you. Okay. And that's getting back to that trauma-informed care. It's like, how are we gonna talk about trauma-informed care, but we're not gonna talk about racism? Racism is a trauma. Racism is an ongoing trauma, but we ain't gonna talk about that. We're gonna talk about trauma in
as the individual. Something wrong with you.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the ongoing trauma that we are steeped in all day, every day,
all the time.
No reprieve from that. We ain't gonna we're not gonna talk about that trauma, but we're gonna talk about the trauma that they created in Walla Walla and went to Richmond, Virginia.
And tried to sell that shit to us. Let's take this shit back to Walla Walla. I do want to talk about one trauma that kind of got our relationship jump started, which is the trauma of the licensure process.
Woo! You know what? Wow, wow.
The
trauma
of the licensure process.
But I feel like, you know what? I'm glad you're bringing that up, because I feel like I want to speak to what you have done and what you've created. And I feel like ultimately that this is what it's about for us, right? Like, it's not about like, oh, we got these fancy degrees, we're doing all these things. But I feel like it's really about the things that happen behind closed doors that people don't know about, right? The fact that I could reach out to you and be like, you know what? Should I do this? I don't know about this. I can't do this. And you'll be like, girl, hell yeah, you can do this. This is a joke, right? And I mean, truly, truly, like, empowering me and inspiring me to do something, because again, a system was set up to tell me you can't, you're not good enough. If you don't pass, you know, all the
things.
That's bullshit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like that was so powerful. Like, I think that, I'll never be able to express like the gratitude that I have for that conversation that we had, truly. And I feel like it's experiences like that that keep me going and that keep me doing this work, because I feel like that is what I want to give to other Black people. You know, the encouragement, and it doesn't have to be even connected to like an achievement or a test per se, but just really being like, I see you, and there's nothing too great that, like, whatever it is, even though society says otherwise, right? Society is always giving us messages that we're not good enough.
Absolutely.
And that we're inadequate, but to take the time to really see each other, right? Like, I see you, you're good enough. And you can do it no matter what it is. And I feel like that is what you did for me when I was feeling like, I don't need to do this. Maybe I can't, you know, whatever the emotions are, and just really having a conversation being like, girl, this is a joke. All this shit is a joke. And it really is, though. And I mean, but I think we need to, and I think that's another thing too, is like, we need to give each other permission. Like, Black people to black people, woman to woman, yeah. whatever it is, like, we need to give each other permission to fail, to succeed, to rest, to do all the things, to yeah. be human.
Just to be.
To be. And so I feel like that is what you did for me when I was just like, I was just going through my own process. And I will say that really... that helped me. And I feel like I'll be forever grateful for you that, but I left that conversation and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I did just that. I went and I took the test. I talked to myself throughout and it was just like, I could do this. Like I could do this. And you told me dumber
people have passed.
First of all, not to mention there's a whole bunch of folks licensed who ain't got no business even saying the word so out their mouth. Right. And so, and here I am, right? And I will say now what I'm thinking about, what I appreciate that you share online is like, I can't wait to give this shit up. And yeah. I'm right there with you because it's just like, I did all the things that you need to do in air quotes, right? To be able to, you know, be taken seriously yeah. in this world, blah, 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 et cetera, bullshit, right? Like I've done all that. But at the end of the day, like, do I need that? Like, do I really need that to
it don't
be
make me, it don't make you, right?
Exactly. Like, do I need that to yeah. be a community with my people, to be supporting yeah. my people, to be teaching my people about how to tap into their power and how to take back what's theirs, yeah. how to take back what they already possess, right? And so, no, I don't. But for right now, I'm playing the game.
You gotta play the game. Right?
Yes. Until we don't have to do it anymore.
And so, like, here's what I receive all of the things that you shared. And, you know, it's, you know, I just continue to be grateful for the space that I'm able to occupy and the trust that, like, my people have in me, which also just lets me know I'm moving authentically, right? So, like, I'm moving in purpose, I'm moving with intention. So I receive what you just shared. And what I really value and respect about your licensure journey is because, like, you understand deeply the licensure bullshit, meaning I'm gonna play the game, I'm gonna get the letters, I'm gonna do the things that need to be done, and I'm gonna bust down more barriers so more of us can get in here and get these people's letters too.
Absolutely.
To do what needs to be done. And when I'm done with this shit, y'all can have it back, right?
100%.
There are a lot of us who think once we get the letters, we other ourselves from our own people.
And see, right? That's the problem. That's a huge problem. Going back to healing Black souls, that's also, like, for me, that's what it's really about. It's just so, because I think that it's so easy to get to that place. Like,
so as a,
going through all these white systems, right? Navigating all this whiteness, right? And I think a lot of Black people lose a part of who they are and lose a part of their Blackness because it's hard. It's hard. It's hard for us to show up the way we do. And I think to not acknowledge that is obviously doing a disservice. But to show up unapologetically, Black is fuck.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. It's like, damn, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like we should be the norm. I don't want this to be an anomaly, right? Like, I want Black folks to show up unapologetically who they are. I don't, doctors, everywhere. Lawyers, whoever they are. Like, you should not have to suppress who you are as a Black person because you're a lawyer, because you're a doctor, because you're this, because you're that, right? Like, and that is really my goal, is like for us to be able to show up unapologetically. I mean, to have Black people, you know, in a space of, in Oregon and being like, you can't say that, you can't do that.
Watch me.
Like, being like, we're free. We're free. Like, so I mean, and that's kind of what, that was my experience, you know, more than 11 years ago when I moved here, Black people being like, oh, you can't. And it's just like, said who? Yeah. Who said you can't? Where I come from, you can do whatever the hell you want to do, you know? And so for me, that's just really what it's about, us. And that's what goes back to the saying, like, we are the word. We are literally a walking example of what it means to just be unapologetically yourself and still have all the letters and all the education and all the expertise
and more, not just still, like, we got more.
Like,
no matter what, aren't we like the most educated group in this goddamn ghetto ass country? Like,
okay,
more.
and I also want to speak to the women, the Black women who are doing this work and who have been doing this work who ain't never stepped foot in the
Ain't
university.
never set foot.
Okay?
Ain't never set
And
foot.
it's just like, it's in us.
It's
It's
who we
in us.
are. You know, this work is who we are.
Exactly. And I want to point out that, like, I don't know about you, but I can tell you 100% of everything. My BSW and my MSW was a formality.
Oh, yeah.
There ain't shit that I learned at those at that university that taught me anything about how to work with my community. Literally not one thing. And I can say that proudly. And I share that with my students. I share that with my students because, you know, there's all of these initiatives and, you know, decentering whiteness and all these frameworks that they're trying to, you know, push. And I tell the students, when I was going to school, we were not talking about racism. We were not talking about oppression.
Not in these ways.
You know, I talked to the students about that, but
I got those lessons outside of school, right? Like my racial identity and cultural identity were already forming before I got into school. Like I knew how Black I was. I knew who and what I came from, who and what I made from. And so it made it increasingly difficult the more I went through like all the educational bullshit for any of that stuff to make me doubt who I was as a Black person.
And I think that's the key too. I think that is the key. That's when I was saying, you know, I was in school and I was kind of like wrestling with like, this doesn't
make no sense.
None of this resonates with me, right? And I think that's why I don't like speak about like the hood and, you know, growing up in the hood as a negative thing at all, because I feel like, you know, that made me. While it has its pros and cons, that made me. And I feel like that created me. I think about my Black teachers who would be like, you too smart to be behaving like that, right? Or you could do whatever you want to do. You know, all those lessons that you don't really have a frame of reference to until you get into a space that tells you like, oh, you ain't good enough. You ain't this, ain't you ain't that. And you like, hold up.
Wait a minute.
What? You know, so all of that. And so I think for people like us in particular, it's like, we already had that solid foundation of Blackness. And I think that we as a Black people in the communities, I don't think we value that enough these days, specifically as it relates to education and academia, because there's this notion of like, even highly educated Black folks, I'm noticing sending their kids to these places that has an emphasis on like academics. And it's like, you're not going to be able to succeed at anything in life if you don't have
a strong, just academics.
If you don't have a strong cultural identity. And I went to schools that they did not have books at times. We didn't have desks. We didn't have like very poor schools.
Yeah.
I feel like what made me successful is having a strong cultural identity. That's it. That comes first. If your child doesn't have that, they're not going to be able to succeed academically because it's going to break them down.
Yeah. And I mean, because the cultural identity is a part of your own personal identity, right? Like who you are as a person. Yeah. And I know this episode is going to come out way late after, you know, this whole Drake and Kendrick thing kind of die down. But you think about Drake, who's lacking personal identity, and he's trying on a whole bunch of cultural identities that do not belong to him. And so just how many of us are out there who haven't had the opportunity to really develop and strengthen a very strong cultural identity, like flailing around in the world, regardless of all the academics that are thrown in our direction.
You still in life as a Black person and you don't know.
And a Black body, but don't know.
Yeah. And don't know how to navigate that. Don't know what that means. Don't know what's going on for you internally. Yeah. It's just,
it's a lot. It's a lot. It's definitely a lot to kind of sit back and watch happen. I'd be entertained. I might even go hold you. I'd be entertained by that shit. But it's also, it's a lot. And it, sad is not the word. It's just, it's concerning is not the word. Honestly, it's to be expected. And I hate that, but like, it's just to be expected when you think about it in the context of colonialism and supremacy.
Absolutely.
This is what happens, right? This is what happens to people with minoritized and racialized identities. They just kind of have a psychological homelessness. This
Absolutely.
Is what happens. So we talked about like deep shit. That was cute. That was cool. I want to spend our last two questions talking about the things that I find the greatest joy in, which are just like hood rat shit and activities. And the reason I like to frame it in like what, how, you know, hood rat things or activities is because we hear a lot about self-care. I don't like the ideas around self-care.
Neither
I
do I.
believe that, you know, we do, like we've already mentioned, we do care in community and we be doing hood rat shit. And that can mean a whole bunch of different things to different people. And so I would love to be able to hear from you and you can share with the listeners, like, what type of hood rat shit and activities do you get into to restore your body and rest your body and reclaim your soul? What you be doing?
You know, I wish it was real exciting, but unfortunately, I don't feel like I really dived into the hood rat shit. That is one of my goals. I will be turning 40 this year, and I definitely plan to get into some more hood rat shit because I feel like I just have been depriving myself all these years. But as of now, you know, I really just enjoy like family and friends, like my friends or my family, like just, and honestly doing nothing, eating, watching bullshit TV. And
that's my favorite type of hood rat shit.
Yeah, that really, that's it. Just eating bullshit, watching bullshit TV, you know, having conversation, which is interesting because we ultimately end up talking about serious shit, but we always make light of it. You know, we joke, we joke, but really just being in community with people that pour into me. That's really my hood rat shit. And
I love it.
Traveling the world and, you know, spending family time. I like to do nothing really.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I've even heard you say it, like our doing nothing is like more than someone's like best, you know? So I like doing absolutely nothing, like laying down, watching some bullshit TV, not thinking about anything, not thinking about work, not thinking about how to save the world, not thinking about healing Black souls, you know, because that's how I spend most of my time. But I like doing nothing. And so I've taken over the last few months, I've taken a deep dive into Trisha Hershey's work.
Yeah.
So I be in the bed a lot.
She got a new book dropping in the fall too. Yeah.
She does?
Yeah. Listen.
The book, the rest deck, all that. I'm like, I'm taking in all of that. I'm just like, yes, rest.
I'm all about it. I call it like bare minimum baddies. Like, bare minimum.
Oh, I love that. That's my hood right shit right there.
Bare minimum baddie. Like, just do the bare minimum. Your bare minimum, like I have said several times, it's more than somebody trying their absolute best.
Absolutely. I believe that wholeheartedly. But I do plan to have more fun though. I plan to like do more things, go out more, have more fun. I'm not really a go out girly, but I want to do that. Like I feel like I should be experiencing more fun, more playfulness. And so that's the goal for the real near future.
I love that for you. And shout out to approaching 40. I love when Black women age. I love when Black bodies just age in general because they don't want us to age. And so when
absolutely
we do it, I'm like, oh, look at us. Like I love just the Black aging process. All right.
I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
I love it. My last question for you that I ask guests and I frame it the exact same way is because we all should know this by now. Kim is not doing this work beyond the year 2030. I'm trying to get out of it.
I love that for you, Kim.
2030.
I love that for you.
Retirement, right? Retirement from the work that I have known it. Because as you have shared and what we know, like this shit is, it's hard. It's some heavy stuff. There's nothing easy about doing this work. And I just like to encourage people like Trisha does, to like reclaim our dream space. How do we dream about new ways of existing, new ways of being, new ways of working and playing and all this type of stuff? And so for you, when you think about like when it's all said and done, when you're like done practicing the work this way at this level of intensity, how you have known it, what are you wanting people to remember you for or say about your time in this work this way?
Oh, what do I want people to remember me for? I think I want people to remember me for being authentically myself, being like showing up and saying the thing that everyone's thinking, but they don't, you know, thinking it, but they don't feel have the confidence to say it. Like, I just want people to remember me in that way. Like just being true to who I am, being true. I want to be able to inspire and encourage people, Black people in particular, to show up in their fullness, mm-hmm. even when they feel like it's impossible, but to just do it, to do it anyway. Like, because at the end of the day, they're going to see us how they're going to see us, whether we show up as somebody else or we participate in a, like, you know, professional, you know, bullshit politics, however you say it, right? Like, whether we show up that way or unapologetically as who we are, they are still going to see us the same. So might as well be true to who you are. And so I feel like that's what I want people, Black people in particular, is to be, show up in their fullness. Yeah. That is what I want people to remember about me. That is what I want to encourage and inspire people to do, is to just to be unapologetically who you are as a Black individual.
I love it. How can the good people connect with you or kind of follow along your journey or get tapped into the work that you offer?
So healingblacksouls.org is my website. That's one way you could find me, or email Kiana@healingblacksouls.org. I'm also on Instagram, Healing Black Souls. I think it's just Healing Black Souls. There's an underscore between each word. That's mm-hmm. how folks can find me. And I have a lot of good things that I'm working on that's coming to fruition. So I'm really excited about those things. So
Well, you're working on those things and going to make more time for her rest shit, though. So like I said.
All that. Oh, yes. Give and take. Absolutely. Give and take. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Beautiful. Well, I thank you for your energy and I thank you for your wisdom and all that you have offered to me and to anyone who will come across this episode. Truly.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for all the work that you are doing and continue to do to inspire, you know, up and coming social workers and the OG folks like myself. I appreciate it. Your work is very much appreciated.
Thank you.
There's no way you didn't get something from that conversation. I know that I did. What has held me from the time that I had with Kiana is just to be poured into, right? The way that I pour into others. And so I'm grateful to Kiana and for Kiana for pouring into me, also sharing her wisdom and the gems that she had to offer to myself and everyone who took the time to listen to our conversation. And so for our good Black word for the week, it's really quite simple. I truly hope that you will consider joining the Bare Minimum Baddies movement. That is the Bare Minimum Baddies movement, because we taking over for the 99 in the 2000s. Because I already know, I've been talking about this for a month of Sundays. When it comes to Black people, Black women specifically, right? We have been conditioned to do and be 10 times better than others. And so when we make a decision to do the bare minimum, our bare minimum is still better than somebody's best. Don't ever forget that. Already excellent. And so our bare minimum is better than somebody trying their absolute best. Our bare minimum is also better than the mediocre bullshit that is controlling and running organizations in this country. And so please consider joining the Bare Minimum Baddies movement, because we not stopping. And so until next time, y'all, please remember to take care of your heart so that we can take care of each other, because we all we got at the end of the day. And we'll chat when we chat. Bye.